This is the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca, episode number 28 for October 14, 2007. Hey there, pet lovers. How's it going? Welcome to the Pets.ca podcast. We're already on episode number 28, and today is October 14, 2007. For today's show, we have another fantastic interview with Dr. Lee, and this time we talk about titers. There's a lot of misconception and confusion over what titers are, and Dr. Lee gives us an amazing introduction into what they are, and that's coming up. But before it does come up, we have today's positive news story, positive PAWS. And today's positive news story comes to us from the Northwest Arkansas Times, where we have a rescuer, Lisa Barnett, and she is the director of a rescue called Stray Central, and she's totally dedicated to cats, so much so that she's referred to as the crazy cat lady, and she lives with 48 cats. That's 48 cats. Some quick math, if all their paws are intact, she's got 192 paws living with her, and that's a lot of paws. And she's had some trouble over the years, she's had an accident, and she's still working, still totally devoted to cats, and I just wanted to give her a little paws up. You know, Pets.ca also has a forum section where so many dedicated rescuers do just such amazing work. You know, rescue is so important, and I don't want anyone on our board to think that I'm nixing them by recognizing Lisa. I want to recognize you all. It's just that that story was in the news, so it caught our attention, and 48 cats is a lot of cats to live with. So the exact story and the links are, of course, going to be available in the show notes. Just find your way to episode number 28. And of course, the address, as always, is www.pets.ca/blog. And that will get you to this blog and podcast. Speaking of blog, something else that we actually tried on our bulletin board at pets.ca, just make your way to pets.ca and go to the bulletin board, there's a link on every page, is we've actually started giving regular members their own blogs. So they could talk about, you know, whatever they want, but, you know, mostly it's for talking about your pets and maybe chronicling what's going on in their lives and stuff like that. And quite a few members have taken to it. And that seems to be a really good experience. So, if you're into being a regular member, for right now, you need to have 50 posts. So a lot of people do, though. So if you do want to join our bulletin board and become a regular, you will get access to your own blog where you can comment on other people's blogs as well. And, just create something fun and memorable for your own pets and for your own experience. It's basically just an online journal. That blog is obviously different from this main blog. So again, for the podcasts, just make your way to the pets.ca blog. That's www.pets.ca/blog. Now on to today's interview with Dr. Lee. It's a really good one. Hope you enjoy it. As always, you can comment after. I'll leave instructions how to do so. And let's get right into it now. So I'd like very much to welcome Dr. Lee again back to our podcast. It's been about 2 weeks since we've spoken with him, and today we're going to talk to him about a topic that some people have quite a bit of confusion over, and that's the topic of vaccine titers, titers in general. What are titers? What are vaccine titers? And I thought that you, Dr. Lee, could clear it all up for us. So first off, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Excellent. It's always a pleasure. You always give such beautiful advice and information to our listeners. So I guess straight up, can you give us a little bit of insight into what titers are in general, how they relate to vaccines?
Well, to start off with, titers are both very simple and very complex at the same time. They start off simple, and then as we start to interpret them, that's where some of the confusion comes in. So hopefully we can clear some of that up today. What is a titer? A titer is a test which gives you two pieces of information. One, it tests for something. It can be anything. Usually it's going to be antibodies, but it can be medications, it could be jelly beans, it doesn't really matter. It's just a test for something. And then the second piece of information is it looks for its relative concentration. So how does a titer test work? Well, the test will take a sample and will test for something. For example, if we're testing for jelly beans, there's a specific jelly bean test, and it would take a sample, and it would look for it. If that test comes back positive for jelly beans, then what they're going to do is they're going to take the sample, dump out half, add in something like water or saline, and then retest. If the test comes back again positive for jelly beans, then they're going to dump out half and add more water and test again. So when we take a look at the test, you'll end up getting two pieces of information. The first is going to be a positive or negative. If it's negative, then obviously the dilution is going to be zero. If it's positive, you're going to get two numbers, and it will typically look like 1:1, 1:2, 1:60, something like that. And the second number has to do with the power of the dilution factor. Was it diluted 2 times, 4 times, 8 times, etc.?
So what we're looking for really is, you know, is what we're testing for present, and B, the ratio of how much of it is present?
Correct. And so when we get like a 1:1, that's going to mean that, one, the test, we did test positive for it, and also any dilution is going to, we're no longer going to see it. So a 1:1 is a very low, titer result. If you had 1:100, that means you can dilute the sample out 100 times and you're still going to see sample. You're still going to see a positive. So the higher the number, the more concentration that we're seeing. In general, what we're going to be seeing, especially in veterinary medicine, is the titers are going to be looking towards antibodies. And if I could just step back for a second on from titers and just quickly go over antibodies versus antigens.
Sure.
Kind of germane to what we're talking about. An antigen is something that the body reacts to. It can be bacteria, fungus, protozoa, allergens, again, jelly beans. It doesn't really matter. Antigen is just what the body is reacting to. When we're looking for diseases, it's going to be the actual infection. An antigen test is going to be, there's no reason to do a titer. We don't need to know what the concentration is. If we can test for and show that there's a bacteria, if there's a parasite, then it's there. For example, the most common dog heartworm test is an antigen test. If it's positive and we're seeing evidence of the heartworm, it doesn't really matter whether or not there's antibodies there. The test is positive. The patient needs to be treated. With antibodies, what we're looking for is the body's response to the antigen. And so at that point, because we're not looking for the actual organism, the concentration and the amount of response becomes very important. And that's when the titers are used. Ideally, we would always just test for antigens, but a lot of times it doesn't work that way. If there's not a lot of the antigen present, there are some diseases that does not take much of an infection to create lots of problems. If the infection is hidden away outside of the blood, then what we're looking for is the antibodies that are circulating inside the blood.
So if I could ask just a really quick question, so then the reason we run titers, is it also to see, you know, the potential for problems? You know, we run titers to see what's going to happen if the pet should catch this, as opposed to does the pet have this?
I think I see where you're going. With four-leg vaccine titers, yes.
Okay.
But vaccine titers, it tells us how much antibody is in that patient's body, and that gives us kind of a guideline as to how that patient would respond if actually exposed to the disease.
Okay.
Now, I'd like to get into the where it gets a little bit confusing.
Sure.
This has to do with what does that test mean? And because we're not looking for the antigen, but we're looking for antibodies, there is a great deal of interpretation. It's not a simple yes or no question. When we get a negative test, there's 3 possibilities. One, there's no disease present, which we would like. 2, the disease could be present, but we've caught it too early. The body has not made the antibodies yet. Depending on the disease and on the patient, that time is a little bit different. I would say as a general rule of thumb, 2 weeks is probably sufficient. to create antibodies, but again, it's a little bit variable. Second possibility is that there is disease, but we've done the test so early that we're not measuring any antibodies. And then the third is that the body has seen the disease, but really hasn't done anything about it. This gets to be very frustrating and also comes into play with patients that are very old, very young, or have some other type of disease or immune compromise. Their body may be exposed to an antigen, but their body and their immune system does not respond to it. So with the negative test, we can get three different possibilities. Positive test, there are going to be four different possibilities.
Yeah, just slightly confusing then, right?
Slightly confusing.
So go ahead on the positive ones.
First of all, there could be active present disease. Second possibility is that we had an active present disease, but that the body has taken care of it on its own or it's been previously treated. But the body doesn't want to get the infection again, so it maintains a high level of antibodies just in case the body ever sees this again. The third possibility is that the patient was exposed but never truly infected. The patient came in contact with the disease, properly fought it off, and is now again also having antibodies to make sure it doesn't get it again. And then the fourth possibility is that the patient's been vaccinated for it.
Wow. So this definitely requires some in-depth study by the vet, you know, trying to figure out what's going on, no?
Certainly we're putting together a puzzle.
Right.
And that's where the concentration of the titer does become helpful. Again, it's not an absolute, but very high titers are going to typically be much more consistent with active disease. Fairly low titers could be previous diseases or exposure. It becomes very frustrating when we get these middle-of-the-road titers. And in any case, whether you're looking at a low titer, a high titer, or even a negative titer, we have to put in the patient into what we're looking at. We have to take a look at history, their clinical signs, other blood parameters, and we have to kind of piece all these things together. Sometimes we have to just rely on how they respond to certain types of treatment as well.
Wow. So how often do you run them?
Very commonly. Out here in the Southwest, where I practice, we have a disease called valley fever or coccidiomycosis, which is a fungal spore. Causes a lot of havoc with both people and animals out here. So we run titers for that and tick fever quite often.
Okay, and then I guess another practical question would be, are they expensive?
It depends. They're not, I wouldn't say that they're very expensive, kind of in the medium expense. Typically, they will run in the $80 to $200 realm.
Depending on the complexity of the titer.
Depending on the complexity of the titer, the laboratory, et cetera, et cetera.
And then, you know, I guess I also wanted to know, are there other reasons why you run titers? What are the general reasons that you yourself would run them?
Typically, the two main reasons that we run titers is, one, going to be looking for disease. Again, this requires a fair amount of thought as to what that answer means. I've actually had a number of patients that we've diagnosed with disease despite the fact that we have negative titers. So one, we're looking for diseases. Two, we're going to be looking for vaccine response. Those are going to be the two most common causes.
Okay. And for you, is it more the disease or more vaccine response?
Definitely with where I'm in the Southwest, it's more for diseases. I think as time goes on, we're seeing more and more vaccine titers.
Okay.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And there does seem to be a bit of controversy, and people do talk about this on our bulletin board every once in a while, about how sometimes, you know, we're over-vaccinating our pets when really what we should be doing is giving a titer to see, you know, how well the vaccine is currently fighting in their system. Some vets might say that you should vaccinate every single year, and then some other vets will say, well, that's not really true because the vaccine lasts longer and there's no reason to give either another vaccine or to boost the vaccine. Rather, just do a titer test and find out how strong the antibodies are at any given time. I guess I was wondering how you feel about that. You know, what's your
So what's your feeling about that situation?
There certainly is a lot of controversy over it, and I think that to a degree the jury's still out. There's still some more information that needs to come in. I think there's a lot of us, myself included, that do see the value of the titers, that do think that vaccines are probably done perhaps in cases that don't need it. One of the concerns and one of the reasons for the vaccines is that when the vaccines are tested, they're also tested towards very young, healthy patients that haven't been previously vaccinated. As that pet gets older, has other diseases coming into play, has age coming into play, we don't know necessarily how well they're going to respond to the vaccine. Also, there's a lot of information, a lot of studies that show that many of our vaccines are lasting longer and longer. I could just kind of make a quick point, though, about the vaccines. While there is a lot of controversy, and I'm seeing a lot more people coming through not wanting to over-vaccinate their pets, we do need to make sure that we clarify which of these vaccines are under controversy. The ones that are under controversy are typically going to be those that are vaccinating against viruses. Vaccines that vaccinate against viruses typically are going to give you much longer protection. Vaccines that are against bacteria, vaccines that are against protozoa, vaccines that are against toxins, those are going to be a lot shorter. For example, our rattlesnake vaccine that vaccinates against toxins, we know that the efficacy of that lasts about 4 to 6 months. So for our search and rescue dogs, we're actually vaccinating those guys 4 times a year. That we know we're not over-vaccinating for because we know that the protection does not last forever. Similarly with protozoa and to a lesser extent bacteria, a lot of those vaccines really are only lasting a year.
In terms of those people that might still be cynical, are when we do titers for vaccines, are they typically cheaper than boosting the vaccine or giving the vaccine again?
Typically, they're going to be a little bit more expensive.
They're going to be more expensive.
And they're not available for everything.
Okay.
For your basic distemper, parvo, and also for rabies, those titers are available. For things like kennel cough, the Bordetella vaccine, there's not a current titer to my knowledge.
Okay. Is there going to be any side effects from administering the titer?
It's a simple blood test.
Okay.
It's one of the advantages of a vaccine titer instead of giving, for example, the parvo vaccine. Is the vaccine, there's a whole host of problems when we administer a vaccine, we're trying to make the body think, gee, you have distemper, you have parvo, you have parainfluenza. And so the body's response is going to be about a 2-week process of creating more antibodies and going through the roles as if it was infected. So it's not a simple thing just to administer a vaccine. With the titer, all we're doing is pulling a blood test. The rest of it all occurs at the lab.
So it's just a simple needle. It's no more painful than a needle for anything else.
Correct. It's going to be no more painful than administering the vaccine. But there's nothing that's occurring to your pet. Nothing's getting injected into the pet. We're just drawing a sample.
Right. So no pet is going to get an allergic reaction from getting a titer test.
Correct.
Okay.
And also, I think as we're getting more proactive in veterinary medicine, a lot of times we are pulling yearly blood work. So it's a lot easier to pull yearly blood work, run the vaccine titer as well, and then save the patient the additional injections of the vaccine.
That's true. That's a really good point. They only have to come in once then, as opposed to being tested for many different things, just as part of a regular exam, not of course if there's a problem. If there's a problem, more tests might be needed, of course.
Of course. But I think as we're getting, again, as we look at our pets as family members, the value of proactive testing becomes more and more clear.
I would so agree. And I suggest that most people on our bulletin board and that come visit our site would also agree. So how often should these tests be done? Let's say we're talking about vaccine titers and we want to try and give a titer before, you know, let's say the individual owner decides or with their vet, they decide that they want to give a titer rather than a vaccine. What's a good interval?
In general, again, this comes under some of the controversy.
Yeah.
I would say as a general rule, places that are going to accept a titer in the place of evidence of vaccine are going to want it done once a year.
Once a year.
And this certainly does not replace the puppy or kitten vaccine. It's pretty fair to say that most veterinarians are going to agree that the first 2 years, first 1 to 2 years of life, they should have all their standard vaccines. It is only after they've been vaccinated that those titers become important. If we do a titer when they're younger, they have not been vaccinated, the likelihood that they're going to have a high titer is low, but we've never boosted the patient or trained the patient to create the antibody.
Right, because at the end of the day, and please correct me if I'm misunderstanding this, at the end of the day, a titer is going to test for antibodies, and there are probably not going to be any antibodies there if no vaccine was given.
Correct.
Okay, so yes, just to reiterate, of course, puppies and our kittens should get some type of vaccinations when they're really, really young, and then I guess it's up to you and your vet to decide if you want to reboost, revaccine, or give titers to determine the level of antibodies with regard to vaccinations. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. So some of it is not that complex. I guess
some of it's not that complex.
Okay. I guess it's just, yes, when you're testing for, you know, other things that aren't so clear, maybe not the vaccination titers. And then, like you say, when you have positives and negatives that can both be read in 3 to 4 different ways, that's when it gets more complex than opposed to vaccination titers, which in general, are they more simple to read and figure out what's going on?
Yes, the laboratory will generally give a threshold that the patient must meet in order for them to consider that the patient's protected. So typically they will say we need a 1 to 4, 1 to 8 in order for this to be effective. And so then it's just a clearly, do they meet that criteria or not?
Excellent. Very good advice as always.
One last thing on the controversy of the vaccine titer.
Please.
I think one of the points that is against the vaccine titer is that when you test on day one for the vaccine titer, and let's say it's an appropriate response and we're happy that that's a high level, on day two, we don't know where their antibody level is. And so there is a bit of a guess that if it's high today, it'll still be high 364 days from then. So I think that that's where some of the controversy comes in. In general, I think that if a patient's been vaccinated when it's younger and it's a middle-aged, healthy dog and it has a high titer, chances of that's going to rapidly go down in a year is going to be low. But that is, we don't know for sure, as that test only checks for the antibody levels of that day.
Correct. And that makes sense. So I guess my next logical question is, for those pet owners that are super proactive and really proactive, is there any harm or is it recommended if they want to test for titers more frequently during the year, maybe twice a year or 3 times a year?
No harm other than just going in and getting the blood test.
So really, there's no side effects. It's just really a matter of expense. Obviously, each time you go in, it's going to cost you a bit of money. But like you say, because it's only testing for antibodies on one given day during the year, if you do want to be super proactive, you can test for them at 3 given intervals a year or 4 given intervals a year.
Correct. And then again, it should also be, I think that this should be a decision that's made with the owner and with the veterinarian as kind of a concerted effort. Because there are some patients which may have a high exposure level. There may be some patients that their lifestyle or where they're at may justify one versus another. The indoor dog that doesn't really go anywhere but does get boarded, you know, depending on where that boarding facility is and what they're seeing. Some of those patients, vaccine titers may be the best route. Some may be vaccine.
But in general, for a pet that you yourself would think is relatively low risk, but the pet owner, for whatever reason, wants to be super proactive, would you as a vet have a problem giving them titer tests two or three times a year if that made them feel more secure?
If that made them feel more secure, I would think that that's great. In general, at our hospital, we will run vaccine titers on a yearly basis for those patients that we think that that's the best option.
Cool. Nice, honest advice as always. So thanks as always for that great info, Dr. Lee. Always a pleasure getting the benefit of your insight. And I know that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be looking forward to this information, this unbiased information, you know, as good as an opinion as you can at this time. And as always, it's appreciated.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a pleasure being here.
Thanks again, Dr. Lee. And I guess we'll be speaking to you in the next couple of weeks, probably.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks so much. And that was our interview with Dr. Lee. I think he did an excellent job explaining what could have been an even more complex topic and gave us quite a lot of insight on it. As always, if you're looking for a vet, Dr. Lee practices out of Phoenix, Arizona and Mesa, Arizona, and you can get his contact information at aachospitals.com. Link, of course, will go in the show notes. Love to get some comments and feedback as always. Our direct email is pets.ca@gmail.com. You can make your way to this blog, www.pets.ca/blog, and comment right in the blog. And you can also comment in our forums. Just make your way to pets.ca, the forums, and you can give comments and or suggestions in the podcasting forum itself. That's going to do it for me for today. Hope you all have an excellent week, an excellent day, an excellent couple of weeks. And we'll be sure to bring you something of interest again shortly. And until then, as always, please give your pets a little scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.